Hey there! Today I'm talking with Jennifer Gonzalez. She's a former middle school teacher who blogs, podcasts, and teaches teaching. She has a website called The Cult of Pedagogy and a podcast by the same name. She's also the co-author of Hacking Education, 10 Quick Fixes for Every School. And just wait till you hear us talk about her article called The Power of Being a Dork.
They're not here for us. We're here for them. That's what it's about. Kids!
Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is all about assisting classroom teachers and school administrators to overcome the many walls or barriers that kids face. Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 is focused on helping you help kids achieve their dreams. As a note, I hope that you will stop by Stitcher or iTunes and leave me a star rating and a comment. That helps the show get noticed by more people. Thanks for listening and joining me week after week.
Welcome to the Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 podcast, bringing you ideas and resources for K-12 classrooms, schools, and school districts. Hosted by Steve Mileto. And now, here's Steve with this week's show.
Hey, today I'm talking with Jennifer Gonzalez. She is a former middle school language arts teacher who earned National Board certification in 2004. She took time off to be a stay-at-home mom, which led to taking a position with a college teaching pre-service teachers. She says that this work gave her a new passion for preparing and supporting educators. She also notes that when she was in the classroom, she felt alone in her nerdiness. She often was afraid that her questions and excitement might be met with sarcasm, so she stifled the urge to share. She's a podcaster, blogger, professional speaker, coach, trainer, and author. She has written several articles, including Why No One Reads Your Classroom Newsletter and 10 Ways to Sabotage Your Classroom Management. She's the author of The Teacher's Guide to Tech, and most recently, she co-authored with Mark Barnes, Hacking Education, 10 Quick Fixes for Every School. Her blog, The Cult of Pedagogy, has been recognized by SmartBrief as an Editor's Choice Content Award winner. Her podcast, The Cult of Pedagogy, will make you think and ask questions. Say hi, Jen.
Hi, how are you, Steven?
Doing great. I appreciate you joining me today. And just a note, I discovered you through your podcast that led me to your blog. And by the way, I love the subtitle, Teacher Nerds Unite. That's very cool. kudos on such awesome information that you share. And I've also read Hacking Education, and it's spot on. And we'll talk about that a little bit later. I reached out to you after listening to your podcast episode 31, The Power of Being a Dork. the blog post is called The Breathtaking Life-Altering Power of Being a Dork, which made me laugh, made me feel that we had like minds, and I hope to continue that discussion today. So just know that that's what's coming at you here in just a minute. But before we get there, let's talk about a few other things, and what I'd really like to start with is, why did you become a teacher?
Oh, well, you know, it's one of those things that when I played as a kid, I would play teacher, I would play school. And I really think a lot of people answer that because they say that they wanted to help people and they really loved kids. And I don't know that that was actually it for me. I really liked maybe it's the control of the situation and being able to design experiences and materials and then set up a situation and then orchestrate it. And I just liked being in charge. And I guess I felt like I had an affinity for it. And I think part of it also was going through school myself and having some teachers who were really, really inspiring and helpful, and then others who were so not. and it made me want to be like those good ones. So, I mean, it definitely had something to do with wanting to inspire kids and help them live great lives. But I really liked the logistics of it a lot, too. I was really drawn to that piece of it. So it was kind of twofold.
Oh, that's cool. You know, it's funny what you're talking about, because I know what you mean. There's always those adults that, myself, I focused on becoming a teacher. I really liked, although I wouldn't share it with my father because he loved history, I really liked history, and I got annoyed every time he'd stop and read a road sign or some marker or something like that. Now I've become him. You know, speaking of that teacher nerd thing happening here. But we have, you know, it's funny because I happen to have three history teachers in high school, my high school experience, who they obviously were there at school for other reasons. And, because I had other teachers in other classrooms that were just awesome and just encouraged you to do everything. And then meanwhile, I'm getting to recognize that this gentleman has a gap in his front teeth, or this over here, we got to, you know, got to know a little bit more about how many ceiling tiles were in the room and stuff like that as you were just trying to stay awake. But, you know, and so I focus myself on, you know, the idea of wanting to make it fun. And it's interesting how some of the not so good versions can help lead us to those pathways. So it sounds like you kind of, you got into the teaching there. You kind of like the way it works and stuff like that. So let's take a look a little bit like this for just a second. What would your ideal classroom, you know, if money's not an issue, look like?
Oh gosh, you know, it's funny because since I left full-time teaching, I've learned so much about teaching that I really think it would look so different from how it was when I was a teacher. I was pretty structured. But now I'm seeing so much more about flexible classrooms with flexible seating options, not only letting the kids sit where they want, but there are actually so many different kinds of seating options. So I actually featured this. I've got a series now on my blog called Classroom Eye Candy, because this one woman posted a picture of her classroom and I just about fell over because it looked like a living room. It had a sofa and some easy chairs and a coffee table, and then it had a few tables in the back and like a little cafe area, and I just thought, this is nuts, this is so great, these kids must love being there. So number one, I think it would look like that, and she pulled it all together with thrift shop stuff.
Nice.
And you know, it's funny because when I've seen ads now for companies that have this real slick stuff that's really amazing looking, I think, I don't know, I kind of like Rebecca's classroom better still, it's real homey. So I think that there would be a lot of seating options. I think there would definitely be a way for every student to access online resources, whether it be a combination of laptops, desktop computers, and tablets, because, you know, I'm really, really into all the possibilities with technology, and particularly with kids being able to work through an environment like Google Classroom or just with Google Drive, being able to turn assignments into their teacher and collaborate in an online environment. I just think that's so nice and fluid. You know, they can do it at school, they can go home, they can move around. And so there would need to be some way of kids to hook up to the internet individually. And then from that point, gosh, I don't know. I think what I would also like to do is have there be options for maybe a little bit more privacy and noise blocking for some students, because I know that I have a hard time concentrating when there's a lot going on around me, and I love to be able to. So whether it's just those little carol things that they have at universities, or some way of shrouding yourself. But gosh, I could probably talk about this forever. I could dream up all kinds of things, but just a lot of options and a lot of fluidity and flexibility.
Gotcha. I appreciate that. We have, you know, it's funny because I'm the same way that knowing what I know now, if I could go back and inform myself somehow, you know, leaving myself a little note, I don't know, I'm a Back to the Future goofball. So, I mean, you know, figure out how to, you know, catch up to former Marty. You know, I would probably change a lot of what I did then. And it wasn't until a couple years into teaching where I met a teacher who did something similar to what you just described, where he got rid of all his desks and he brought in these couches and furniture from neighbors and stuff like this. And I really think that some of it smelled like wet dogs, but you know, I was like, where'd you get that furniture from? He would never tell us, but yeah, just awesome stuff that can help the learning environment, however you work. I appreciate you sharing that. So let's use that to kind of push ourselves forward and talk a little bit about the power of being a dork. I mean, tell everyone what you meant and where you're going from there, because I really like, you don't know how many times I have shared your opening in that, where you're talking about the gentleman.
The Chicago and the trombones.
The Chicago and the trombones, yes.
Okay. That post evolved from when I was working with pre-service teachers. I would give them sort of tips every day, I'd sort of drip it out at each class. I'd give them a different kind of teaching tip. And one of them was be the dork. And then I would explain what I meant by that. And especially, this is especially because I was working with people who were going to teach middle and secondary. So they're going to be dealing with kids who are just too cool for school. And so I said, you know, there's going to be a lot of times when you'll have an activity that you want the kids to do and they're going to just be too embarrassed, or they're going to want to just phone it in, like a, you know, speech or something like that. They'll all get up and they'll do like bare minimum just because they don't want to take any risks. So you have to be the one to kind of go first. And in the piece, even I use the analogy of a buffet. You know, sometimes you go to a party and there's this beautiful spread and no one is touching it because they don't want to go first.
Yes.
And all you need is that one person to say, fine, give me a plate, I'll get started. So I think it's the same in the classroom. If you're willing to kind of make a fool of yourself sometimes, whether it's like demonstrating to them how they should read a text out loud or whatever, sometimes you'll get more kids on board because they'll say, all right, well, if she did it, I can kind of ham it up too. And but if somebody does, it doesn't go first, then nobody will. So that was kind of my, and not only that, but it was also in terms of just being super enthusiastic about the things that you're learning. I had I did this thing that was sort of like Outward Bound when I was 17. It was like an outdoor 3-week thing. We did a lot of hiking. We spent the night in all different kinds of places in the woods. And we had to do stuff that was really, really scary to me because I had never done it. You know, climbing glaciers. And this was, I grew up in Europe, so that's why there were glaciers. But anyway, we had this one instructor who was just so over the top enthusiastic. He was like, yeah, we're going to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning tomorrow and we're going to hike for 5 hours and we're going to climb a glacier. It's going to be awesome. And we just would make fun of him because we were all juniors and seniors in high school. And it was just like, dude, really? Like, and we would start making fun of him. And one day my friend April and I, we were terrified of this thing we were about to be doing. And we started to imitate him. And so every time we would sort of stumble, we were like, yeah, I just scraped my leg. That was fantastic. This day is great. And the thing that started happening after about an hour of us doing this is that we started to actually kind of feel like him. And I don't know, it was a real epiphany for me because I realized you can kind of, there's this phrase called emotional contagion, where if you are demonstrating a certain type of emotion, it can be catching.
Gotcha.
And I think that's what happened with him. And I just think that as teachers, we don't always recognize how contagious our emotional state can be. So I think to demonstrate an infectious love of learning, the kids will roll their eyes and they will call you a dork or whatever, but it's going to kind of sink in. Like even if it's later on in life, they'll realize, you know, that person, she really kind of loved her life every day. And it was over things like, oh, look at the design of this book cover. Isn't that gorgeous? Just little things that if you notice them out loud instead of just keeping everything hidden, I don't know. I think you influence kids in ways that you don't even necessarily realize.
I totally agree with that. And I appreciate you sharing all the extra parts of that story because that's, you know, it's something that some of my favorite teachers in working with, I was a high school history teacher for 9 years and then went into administration. And I was a high school principal and as well for a bunch of years. And it was funny because I discovered the same thing I discovered in teaching. I discovered as a principal that you got to figure out how to connect with the kids. Cause I'm a big believer that they buy into you before they buy into the subject. So I'm trying to figure out how to get them to buy into it, especially because, you know, come on, when I say history, a lot of people went, you know, you gotta make us memorize dates or times or whatever. Oh, dude, do we have to do this? You know, there's any number of things that you get used to with people saying about history. Right. Yes. Okay. This is really going to be fun. Just like you're describing, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And they're going, can you show me the door? Anyway, and you know, what's funny is that, me in the classroom, did you ever see in 1984, there was a movie called Teachers?
Oh yeah, it's Rodney Dangerfield.
It's not Dangerfield.
That's Back to School. I know what. Right. This is Nick Nolte.
This is Nick Nolte with Richard Mulligan, and Richard Mulligan plays a character who's the substitute teacher who actually is just is receiving some mental assistance. And he's not even the substitute teacher who's supposed to be there, but he has all the costumes and stuff. All right, so that is that was my character, right? That's what I wanted to be like, was the so I put together all these costumes, and I had these this character named Bob, and then he became lots of other Bobs, Indiana Bob, Fireman Bob, you know, just you name it. The kids, and it's a long story about where Bob came from. We did role play games in the history classes that I was doing, and Bob became like the dice, and then the other characters, like there's Goat Herder Bob. I mean, there are any number of that would show up at different times, and so what happened now, that what's really interesting is that the dorkier I got, the more, this is what I love about teaching 10th graders, because I was really focused on 10th grade, and they will allow you to go there, and they actually will come into that world, and it's awesome. And even, you know, some of the seniors who would be taking a class with me who had you know, failed something before or something, so that's why they're in the class with the sophomores, you know, they're doing the thing like you're talking about, too cool for school type stuff, and then suddenly they're all of a sudden you catch them, they're getting into the idea that, all right, we can do this too. And and that lent itself to, you know, as you connected with, because in working with teachers, I work with teachers now who I'm primarily, ones that I work with are ones who struggle a little bit in the classroom, and so I'm trying to figure out how to help them. And one of the things that I notice is that many times they don't have that connectivity with the kids. They don't have that dorkiness. They don't have they haven't figured out how to make those relationships and such. And but that's why when you're saying this, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is exactly right. Because some of the gentleman that I was describing to you with the who's the first one I met who got rid of all his desks and all that stuff, you know, he'd be so goofy. He was the English teacher. One of the schools I taught in had middle school concepts in the high school, so we taught on a team in 9th and 10th, and so he's the English teacher on the team, and he would do all kinds of goofy stuff, but like rhyming day, which drove me insane. I'd always forget and walk into his classroom on rhyming day, and then I'd do things like cat sat on the hat, and he's like, oh, come on, you can do better than that, and
it's a difficult balance to strike too, because I think that sometimes people could hear this concept, and I think there is a way of taking it too far where you're not even doing content anymore.
Yes,
you're
very
just
much
putting
so.
On this bizarre show every day, and I think that annoys kids too, where it's just like, yeah, he's funny, but we aren't actually learning anything.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
And then there's also, you know, it's funny you were mentioning high school teachers. I think this concept is really important for high school teachers, because when I first started teaching, I was 26, and I look kind of young anyway. So, I mean, there just wasn't that much of a difference between me and my students.
Right.
And so, you know, one way that people say that you have to differentiate yourself from your students is to just be really serious and businesslike. And I think there is something to that. But another way is to show them, hey, I'm not a teenager anymore. I don't care that much about seeming so cool. Like, you guys are missing out. And here's how I'm going to make myself different. I'm going to talk to you about how great War and Peace is. And they're going to, you know, no teenager is going to walk around and do that. So, you know, you don't necessarily have to be just a stodgy old person. You know, you can. But I think the mistake so many high school teachers especially try to make is we go for that easy win of just like being sarcastic or putting a kid down. Yeah. Everybody goes, oh, and then you've won over a few of them, but none of them trust you anymore. So I think there are maybe, I can't think of the word, but less than logical ways of reaching them that people may not, counterintuitive ways that you may not even be thinking of that, I don't know, you can win their hearts, I think, in these ways.
Yeah, that's excellent. That, I mean, that's exactly what's happening. Is it? To me, what you're really trying to do is win their hearts, so that then they start buying into, which is what sounds like happened to you when you're on that trip with that teacher, as you're making fun with him, you start realizing, well, you know, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah, and yet it still took me. I mean, this is one of the things I write about in that blog post, is how many years I feel like I wasted just trying to be cool. And I mean, I still think I slip into it sometimes, but I wrote about this guy that I went to college with, and we were sitting there just in a fraternity house listening to Chicago playing cards or something, and he was a trombone player, and all of a sudden he starts air tromboning in the middle of this song, and I just thought, what is he doing? Like, all the other people air guitar, and like, he's air trombone, and he still is a very accomplished professional trombonist now with an orchestra in San Diego. He was serious, but that was such a passion for him. And the great thing was, after hanging out with him for a couple of weeks, like, now anytime I hear Chicago, I actually notice the horns, which I mean, I never noticed the horns in Chicago's song. So I feel like that was such a gift he gave me.
That's,
you know,
that's awesome. That's funny. As a former trumpet player who still brings it out once in a while, when I read that part, I was thinking, because that's when I listen to Chicago, that's what I hear, the brass, yeah, man. That's what I'm listening yeah to. So that was funny. Let's kind of use this to kind of go into just a little bit. In your blog article, you state, you kind of draw it to a conclusion by stating there are three ways that dorking out can change. By the way, I like that. Dorking out can change the world. One, being a dork teaches others to love learning. Two, being a dork frees the dork in others. And three, being a dork puts a dent in the status quo. So talk about that just for a little bit in terms of teachers.
Okay. So the first one that it... teaches others to love learning.
Yes.
So that piece I kind of went over a little bit. If you demonstrate this enthusiasm for your subject, your students can kind of pick up on that. The number two is you free the dork in others. That's the whole buffet analogy of if you will go first, then they will go. The third part of the status quo is I feel like almost every significant contribution to society has been made by somebody who is just completely geeking out on something and has probably been told at whatever phrase was used at that time period to get a life. You know, whether it, you know, I mean, quit talking about trying to split the atom or, you know, you have to have a certain level of obsession about something to pursue it to the extent that you're going to actually, you're going to be so creative with it that you're going to come up with something new and groundbreaking and something that changes the status quo, whether it's art or science or literature or whatever. All of the people that have contributed great things are weirdos in some way. So
nice.
So I think that some people out there, some of our students and even some of us as adults, we have these great ideas, you know, or we have these things that we're really passionate about, but you know, sometimes if you go to a party or something with people you don't know very well, everybody can be so boring because we're all putting on our most dry, middle of the road, lowest common denominator personality to be as inoffensive as possible, which to me describes like every middle school kid I've ever met. Like they just want nothing but to blend in, please. And so if we can sort of show our student, like right now I do CrossFit, which is a fitness weightlifting thing, and people who are into CrossFit are into CrossFit, and they talk about drinking the Kool-Aid and being in a cult and everything, but I get it, but it's you know, it's one of those things where it's just like you just want to talk about it all the time, and I just think that kind of enthusiasm it can take you really great places, and it would be great if everybody could tap into that, because I think everyone has their obsessions, they just keep them private and secret sometimes.
And I got to tell you, that's something that, you know, especially within the classroom, because teachers oftentimes are like those middle schoolers that go into the dance where they want to stay on their wall and, you know, they really don't show who they are. And when you can be a fly on the wall in their classroom, you see this whole different person. And it's really kind of inspiring then as another teacher and to be able to, and as a principal, there used to be those teachers I'd love to go see because they're so different when they're in there with the kids and they're on and they're doing, and they're dorking out and they got all this stuff going on. And it's just amazing because you see the kids just wanting more. And those are the ones that they connect with and they're able to, the kids, you know, really get into this idea that, you know, learning can be fun, not only fun, exciting. And there's some really cool stuff to it that, you know, I may not go home and talk to my parents about it at the dinner table because we all know they're going to say they did nothing for the day. But
right. But
in the back of my mind, I got something else going on there, and I'm thinking, you know, maybe there is something to that area or something like that. You know,
mm-hmm.
And it's just and that's the cool thing, and I think that's one of those major impacts that just, you know, in your in those three points that you're making, that it really does. I love that being a dork frees the dork in others, because as the kids start seeing you be able to do this, then it's funny because they'll start going along that path, and then they get into the learning or wanting to know more or wanting to share more or something like this. And it's pretty cool.
And
stuff.
You know, with some kids, it may not even take for a couple of years or a decade,
right?
But you're planting seeds anyway, that they may look back on it later and say, maybe I could be a little bit like that guy. He looked like he was having a good life.
There you go. Well, I love that. And that was what a great article.
Well, thank you. Man, when I first wrote it, it got no attention at all. That's why sometimes I put stuff out. I recycle it like once a year because new people find it.
Well, That one is right on the money. And like I said, I've shared it with so many different people, and I will continue to, because it's it's something that I firmly believe in. And having been proud to call many teacher friends and education friends, you know, basically that's going back to your Teacher Nerds Unite thing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we could add in there, release that, those of you who release the inner dork, hooray. I don't know, you know.
But, yeah.
Well, let's move from there. Let's talk about hacking education, the 10 quick fixes for every school.
Yes.
Who's your target audience, and what inspired hacking education?
Well, it's funny. Mark Barnes is my co-author, and we kind of dreamed up this whole thing together, and we talked a lot about that, about who is our target audience, because we thought anytime somebody wants to change something in their school, the typical way of doing it is to have a committee meeting and then have another committee meeting and then bring it up for approval here and there. And, you know, have a five year, just things just happen very slowly when it comes to change. So we thought, well, I guess administrators would be the ones who would be able to make changes in their school. But the ideas that we're putting out in this book are solutions to problems that teachers deal with, administrators deal with, things that are age-old problems in schools. And so the solutions that we're trying to put out there are things that anybody could do. So our target audience is administrators, or it could just be individual teachers. An individual teacher could pick that up and read it and say, okay, I know how I can try this in my own classroom. And then if it works, then I can share it with somebody else. And then if they like it, then maybe we can implement it as a whole school. One of the things we try to do with all 10 of those hacks is show people how they could do it on a sort of school or district-wide platform. Or if you're in a school that's not that into trying new things, how could you do it just yourself or with the teacher across the hall? Or how could you try it just within the walls of your classroom? So the objective is that these are 10 different ideas that are cheap or free, and these are things that you could try tomorrow or this week. They don't require a lot of special equipment. They don't require a lot of special permission or committees or plans or anything. You can sort of implement them tomorrow.
And that's awesome, because that's part of what I look for when I'm helping teachers and school-based administrators, are the things that, number one, don't require translators to go from. And what I mean by that is, you know, lots of big words that
right.
Everybody's going, what? Mm-hmm. And then, and two, stuff that you could read tonight and tomorrow, you know, you could put in your plans tonight and tomorrow you're putting it in action or pursuing it or whatever. And that's mm-hmm. what I loved about this book. And, you know, one of the things that I wanted to get you to do is kind of, could you just talk about one of your favorites out of there? For example, like one of my favorites is the Marigold Committee, which, you know, has people, the idea of hooking up mentors and working together to help keep teachers in the profession. What about yours? What's your favorite?
The one that has, I think it is my favorite, and it's becoming very, very popular. It's the one that people comment on the most, is called the Pineapple Chart. And what that is a, well, teachers are, we are each other's best source of professional development. Every day, all through the building, there are teachers doing really interesting things. And we never get to see each other teach, or very rarely. Maybe if we're required to, we'll have to do some sort of a peer observation or something. But those situations are usually very stilted and formal and scary for everybody. So the Pineapple Chart is a way to get teachers into each other's classrooms so that we can see each other teaching. Not only to see strategies and practices, but also I know one of the best ways I learned classroom management was to watch my own students in somebody else's classroom.
Nice.
When they switch classes, all of a sudden I would see how they responded to that teacher and what they did. And I thought, oh, but I would also pick up other things. I'd be sitting there and I'd look around the walls and I'd see little organizational types of things. And I'd think, oh, I want to try that. But that was my first year of teaching. I was required to go and observe. If I hadn't been required, I might not have done it. So this is what the Pineapple Chart does. This is, imagine in any school, you've got this sort of central area. Maybe it's where the teacher's mailboxes are or the copy machine is or someplace where teachers go every day. And it can be just a big, like a whiteboard. People are actually doing different types of things for this. along the left-hand side, this is a chart, along the left-hand side, what you have is the class periods for the day. So you might have period 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Across the top is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Okay, so it's a grid. If I am trying something new, let's say I'm going to try to use Kahoot, which is a fun quizzing tool that you can use with your students. And some other teachers say they've heard about it, and I think it's going to be really fun. I want people to come watch me if they want to. So I write third period on Tuesday. I write Gonzalez, Kahoot. Then I'm advertising to everyone, you are welcome to come in and observe. And we shouldn't even use the word observe. You're welcome to come in and watch, come in and visit. And the idea is, you can come in for 5 minutes if that's all you have time for. You can come in and sit in the back of the room and grade papers and just sort of pick it up a little bit through osmosis. This does not have to be a note-taking formal observation. It's just an open door, which is where the pineapple comes from, because that's a traditional symbol of welcome on like welcome mats or something like that. So okay. That's why the pineapple. So what teacher, and this is really starting to take off because, you know, sometimes we don't know if it's okay to walk in. Maybe if we know somebody's doing something neat in their room, we don't want to necessarily walk in and interrupt or cause any problems. And also, you know, what if it's something you're not that interested in? You might want to know what they're doing before you go in. Or maybe it's one of those days when it's like, nah, they're not doing anything that great today. And so it's meant to set up a big open door policy with teachers so that we can make the best use of our time. If I've got planning, but I know that somebody down the hall is doing something really great, and it's that day, then when I look at the chart, I can go and say, okay, I'm going to bring my work over there today so that I can watch. So anyway, that is what a pineapple chart is. And every time I hear from somebody who's read the book, not every time, but a lot, so many of them say, we're putting up a pineapple chart tomorrow. We're getting ready to start it. And so it's been pretty neat. I think the one problem is that I think a lot of teachers are willing to put their stuff up there, but some schools are having a little bit of trouble getting the teachers to actually go.
Right.
So I think principals can give incentives. They can, you know, say, hey, I'll do your bus duty if you do 5 pineapple visits this month or something like that. You know, there's ways of encouraging. But I also think that any teachers that do it can report out on it at the faculty meeting and say, this is what I saw in Mrs. Mileto's class. It was so great. You know, she did this, and make it sound like it was a fun thing so that it'll encourage more teachers to do it. But I don't think teachers are used to this kind of informal visiting. So
it's
a culture change that we need.
That's awesome, because it's a great tool, and I could see why you'd have so much interest in it, because it is one of those things where you have to, you know, it's kind of like that, cold engine that you have to jump start, or you have to something to, because you got to get them to realize there is a reason to go do this, and it's not because, you know, Mileto made you do it or something like this. You know, you gotta
and it's free.
It's free.
Not
yes,
somebody coming into your building to make you sit and listen to them for 2 hours. This is not a seminar that you have to go to. It's not a college class, but you will probably learn more applicable stuff that you can use in your own classroom by doing this than you will taking a 3-hour graduate class.
You are so right. And it's amazing, because just so often I think, you know, it's sad, because a lot of times what teachers do is some are afraid to share what they do. And they kind of close themselves off instead of, you know, because you really want teachers to steal from each other. And some people get afraid of being stolen from. And I don't mean that obviously in monetary value type things.
Right.
And so they get afraid that, and I think a lot of times it may just be with the idea that they're, you know, what I'm doing is not really that good enough or something like that. I don't want somebody to tell me that. And when instead it's really like, dude, man, this is awesome. You need to share this in the world. Shout it out. Ah.
Well, and I do think I think that's a big problem with getting observed, is that we think that if somebody's going to come into our room, especially like another teacher, like we have to only do it when we're doing something perfect.
Right.
Which is kind of backwards, honestly, although I completely get that instinct. When other people, if I have somebody come to my house and I have it looking spotless, really what that does is it makes them feel like they can't invite me to their house, because look how perfect my house is, which it never is. But sometimes that's what I tell myself. If I haven't managed to sweep up the crumbs under the table, I say, well, that's just going to make my guests feel better about themselves.
Nice analogy. I like that.
So it's sort of like with your classroom. If you are only doing everything in the most perfect way, that's going to make them less willing to have you come and see them, because they say, well, watch. she does it perfectly. I can't let her come see me. Whereas if you flub things a little bit, then it just loosens everything up for everybody. And it creates a culture of experimentation and openness. And everybody's just going to learn better.
I so agree with that. And it's something that it just changes the climate of the school, I think, because as they start realizing they can share and they can learn from others, and it's okay to, it's okay to be proud of some of the stuff you got going on in there. You got, instead of being closed out. So I love it. Well, where can listeners find Hacking Education? Where can they purchase it? And if they want to take a look at it?
I'd say probably, well, it's on Amazon. So they can look for it there. And actually, Mark, he's the publisher of the series. He's actually put out two other hack learning books. It's a whole series. That was the flagship of them.
Yes.
But he's done two others, and he's got another one coming up soon on the Common Core. So if you just looked up Hacking Education on Amazon, or if you go to my website, cultofpedagogy.com, I've just got a little picture of it right in the sidebar. You click that and go straight over to Amazon.
Excellent. And I'm going to have in the show notes, I'm going to have links to the podcast website, Hacking Education, and so forth. And as a note, I've read two, Hacking Education and right now the second one's escaping me, Hacking Writing.
Make Writing. Yeah,
that's
that
it.
It's a little bit of a different title because that's a shorter form.
Yes.
So I've read
that one, and I got myself in there, so I get those preview copies. So I just got the one about the most recent one that came out, and I downloaded it, I think, last night. So,
fantastic.
But I enjoy the series, which is awesome. But I love Hacking Education. I encourage everyone to take a look at this. I get nothing out of this. This is not a paid for advertisement here. But I just appreciate that it's going in there. And once again, it's easy to the readability of the book is awesome. It's just it's easy to read, easy to understand, and to say, hey, I could see me doing this, and I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, that was by design. We really did not want it to be a super academic book. I think there's plenty of those already out there.
Most definitely.
And I don't think a lot of them are getting read, unfortunately. We wanted something that people were going to read and implement.
Well, we always need something that'll hold the door open or something like that. You know, it's, and so, never mind. Moving on. What I'd like to do before we close out is I'd like to ask you a couple other questions. And this is one that is kind of near and dear to my heart. If you were given the chance to talk with 100 brand new teachers and they haven't started teaching yet, what advice would you give them?
Well, that is the marigold concept. That is probably my most read post. It's called Find Your Marigold. And in gardening, a lot of gardeners will plant marigolds near other plants like tomatoes because they have a protective nature. They can keep pests away and that kind of thing. And so a marigold is a term that I came up with for a teacher who, if you can spend time with them, this is somebody who is positive about teaching, positive about the kids, about the administration. They're encouraging. This is the opposite of somebody who is going to say something like, oh, don't worry, that enthusiasm will be gone in a few years. Somebody who almost can't wait to see you become burned out and bitter.
Right.
Those are the people you need to stay far away from because you will become them quickly. So for a teacher, I think there is so much to learn when you're a brand new teacher, and there's so much advice that you can get, and I think so much of it is good advice. But to me, it all will come in time if you are spending time with the right people. If you're spending time with people who are really excited about learning new things, even if it's their 30th year of teaching, you tell them about some new piece of technology and they say, oh, let me see that, I want to try that. You know, or there's some new change in methodology and they say, all right, I'm going to give it a shot. They're not going to say, oh, what are they making us do now? Somebody who's just got a great attitude about their job, they are going to influence you to find all of what you need in terms of relationship building, learning the curriculum, classroom management, techniques, everything, because it's that infectious thing I was talking about. You will pick up their attitude and you will eventually learn everything you need to know, and you'll do it with the right frame of mind. So that's my one piece of advice. Find your marigold, even if it's not in your building. Some teachers have the misfortune of being placed in a building that's just toxic.
Yes.
You may have to find your marigold online. You may have to reconnect with somebody from your teaching program. But as long as you have that lifeline to somebody who can say to you, you can do this, and here's how you do it, and let's just pick ourselves back up again, then I think you can be very, very successful at this very hard job.
Awesome advice. And I will, and to make sure I can go back and find the Marigold one, and I'll highlight, I can link to it.
Yes.
Correct. So I'll make sure I do that.
Yeah. It's cultopedagogy.com/marigolds. That's the URL. So
excellent. We'll link back to that. Awesome advice. So now that's going to lead me to this. Do you have a teacher in your past that made a difference in your life? And if given a chance to say thank you, who would it be and what would you say?
Gosh, there were a lot of them. There's actually the lady who taught me to be a teacher. Her name was Deborah Schmidt. She is no longer with us anymore, but she was just passing through really at Penn State where I did my undergrad. And she was one of the first people who was a teacher, but also just seemed, I hate to use this term now that we've talked about how great it is to be a dork, but she was really cool. She was really cool. And yet she really loved her subject area, and she was really into teaching, and she was somebody that I wanted to be like. That's the best way that I can explain it. And she was really interested in us as people. And I don't know, I just still think about her. And after she died, I found online a lot of things her students had written about her, and it's obvious that she has impacted a lot of people. And it really comes down to that main thing, that she saw them as people. They felt seen by her, which I think, all methodology aside, I think if you don't have that, you're only going to get so far with your students. And she made me feel the same way.
That's awesome. That is awesome. It's amazing, the power of a teacher in people's lives. So I love it. Well, Jennifer, it's been awesome talking with you today. And if the audience would like to connect with you over social media, where can they find you?
I am on, probably the best thing to do would be to go to cultofpedagogy.com. And then I've got a string of social media bars. I'm on Twitter @cultofpedagogy. I have a Facebook page. I'm now on Instagram. I'm trying with Instagram and it's the same handle @cultofpedagogy. So I'd say if you started at the website and then choose your social media platform, you'll find many of them there.
Awesome. Well, I'll put links to, each and every one that I can find, and because I know you're out there all over the place, so it's awesome. And keep on writing that good stuff, and
enjoy
the podcast. And
this is great talking to you too.
Well, good talking with you. Have an awesome day, and take care.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, listeners. We want to remind everyone to check out all of our digital content at teachinglearningleadingk12.com. That's teachinglearningleadingk12.com. You can also find our podcast on iTunes. Just search Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12 in the iTunes Store. Check back often for updates and new material.
Hang tight, everyone. I'm going to let go of the wall.
You have been listening to Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12. Recorded in Eastman, Georgia, at the heart of Georgia Precinct.